one of our callers, well, I shouldn't say one, a few of our callers posed even earlier this week, right up through this morning, and it has to do with a list, like essential businesses and non-essential businesses. And there was some confusion, I think, when I was listing off what was deemed as essential and what was non-essential. And there was the confusion, I think, was, well, a lot of people think only the first responders are essential. And they were surprised to hear that some stores that were actually like those box stores of like Lowe's and Home Depot can actually remain open. So maybe let's start there so that instead of me speculating or commenting on, I can go right to you, the commissioner, to kind of clear up any of the confusion.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So the essential stores that are open on the retail side, certainly food stores, convenience stores, gas stations, but also hardware stores, including a Home Depot or a Lowe's, you know, being able to fix your pipes and get various tools and hardware that's needed for your house. You know, we view that as an essential item and an essential thing that folks need to do. So those are definitely open. In addition, other big box stores like a Walmart that sell food, in addition to other goods, clothing and the like, those are able to remain open as well. Mm-hmm. And then one thing we also had in there was for non-essential retailers like a clothing store, or a jewelry store, or just a toy store, we did offer them the flexibility to the extent they wanted to remain open and do a curbside pickup or a delivery similar to what restaurants are doing. We gave them that flexibility. You know, my sense is many will take it, but many will also not take it.
Yeah. And speaking of restaurants, we're talking about curbside services. And we can, obviously we cannot go in and eat in the restaurants, and that's completely understandable. But the curbside services that are being offered by these restaurants, is it any and all restaurants, or did they already have to have a takeout option to begin with?
No, they all can participate in that. And many sit-down or more formal restaurants that didn't do a lot of takeout business, we've seen a lot of them convert to a takeout and delivery type option. You know, my sense is this is maybe 10 or 20% of their typical business. So it's certainly, you know, we'd like to see them be able to come back sooner. But many have converted and like the flexibility. Some have said we're just going to close down until we can reopen and do business as usual.
Gotcha. And when it comes to retail, you're talking about like electronic stores or appliance stores. Let's take Best Buy, for example. Are they allowed to remain? And I don't want to just single out Best Buy. I'm just using them as an example. Would they allowed to be open, or must they remain short? Like, are they considered essential or non-essential?
No, so electronics and computer equipment as well as appliances are essential. So if you need if your refrigerator breaks and you need a new refrigerator, we think that is something that's important you can do. Same thing with, electronics and computer when a lot of folks are in their houses practicing the important social distancing.
Okay. So then maybe it's better to go through a list that would be considered non-essential.
Yeah, again, on the retail side in particular, I mentioned a clothing store, a toy store, a jeweler, you know, stores that aren't selling all the goods we discussed, you know, they are going to be closed, or they can do a curbside pickup option if they want to. Mm-hmm. So that's flexibility. And then in particular on the office worker side of things, as well as non-for-profits, that's where we've seen, you know, a significant number of them opt to close or a significant amount of their employees working from home. You know, there's a company that's headquartered in the western part of the state that reached out to us and said 75% of our workers are working from home. We have 25% in the office that are performing essential services like payroll, operations, some of their cash management. You know, that is, I think, typical of what you're seeing for many of the office jobs around the state, where folks can work from home and a certain small portion of the workforce is in the office if need be.
Okay. Are there any industries that is left to their own discretion?
So nothing is left to their own discretion. We tried to be pretty exhaustive in the guidance that we provided on Sunday night. So, you know, where there is some discretion for businesses is if you are in an essential industry, like financial services or insurance, for example, we are urging employers for their non-critical staff, those that don't need to be in the office, mm-hmm. for them to telework or to stay home.
Okay.
So that is but we're relying on the insurance company in this example to have their staff designated as such and make that judgment.
And I'm glad that you've clarified that, because as you can imagine, there's so many phone calls that we were getting both on and off the air. Even when we'd leave the airwaves, people would call us up and say, you know, can you repeat that list that you mentioned on the air? Is what's essential and what's non-essential? Because I've always thought it was basically the police, fire, and EMTs and media and everybody else has to say, like, similar that you would see in a blizzard or one of those big nor'easters that we get occasionally during the winter.
And I think it's a great point, Gary, because I think the distinction here is, you know, this is going to last weeks, if not months, and we're certainly monitoring the virus daily, hourly, and making sure that if we need to be more aggressive or more prescriptive in terms of non-essential businesses and limiting interactions, you know, we're watching that, and that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. But unlike a blizzard or a hurricane or something that where you know the end date or you know when it'll at least be over and we'll be in the recovery mode, here that's still uncertain. So we wanted to, in my example about the appliance or the electronics, we wanted to afford some of the basic necessities, what could be a several-month period. We thought that was really important, but we're definitely tracking it. But again, I can't say it enough. We're really urging employers that have that are open, manufacturing and other areas, make sure they're taking the right protections and keeping their workforce safe. So additional cleaning, practicing the physical distancing, potentially doing multiple shifts. It's really critical that we're keeping our employees safe and that employers are taking the steps to do so. And then again, non-critical employees absolutely need to be working from home. It's important that everyone hear that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And again, this clarification, man, I mean, this is why you're on and asking the question directly to you. You had said something, though, just a few seconds ago about, you know, there's such uncertainty as far as whether this could last, you know, weeks or months. I'm not going to ask you to speculate where in that window you think it will last, because it'd be very unfair and it would only be a speculation. No one knows definitively. I think it's all predicated on when we can curb the actual coronavirus itself. But I will ask you, the aftermath and the economic downturn or downfall that we could potentially have, anywhere from a real dry or slow business climate to a recession, or possibly, if it just really takes on several months, the potential for a depression. And I don't want to put the you know, fear into people or overhype something like this, especially unnecessarily. But what are some of the ramifications the longer we go with this self-quarantine and lack of enterprise here in our state?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's the right question, because again, there's no template or playbook for this. We've not seen this type of crisis before, where there's an uncertain end date like this, where basically our economy in many parts has just come to a stop. You know, so I think, listen, you can't, this is all speculation here, but certainly, second quarter, unemployment is going to be significant. We're already seeing that at the Department of Labor, 20 times what we typically would see in a day. We're seeing daily basically for the past approximately 8 or 10 days. So there's significant uptick there given what's happened in the economy in terms of output or growth. You know, my expectation is the second quarter is going to be worse than the financial crisis and worse than 1980 and possibly worse than any time since the Depression. So I think the real question, though, is what happens in the third quarter and the second half of this year. Can we rebound and rebound quickly? So the technical definition of a recession is two quarters of negative growth. I think that's certainly possible. I don't think a depression is very likely at this point in time at all. Mm-hmm. I think the goal is to keep the economy ready to rebound as soon as we beat this virus, and then to turn the economy right back on and hopefully get back to quickly where we were in January. But there's a lot of uncertainty around it, but I think the second quarter certainly is going to be bad. Our hope is, first, let's fight this virus and beat the virus, and the quicker we beat the virus, the quicker our economy is going to come back.
Exactly. But what would it take to have an uptick in the third quarter and put people back to work?
Again, I think it comes down to, you know, when can we get over the hump of this infection curve and have containment and the mitigation measures working, where some sense of normalcy, life as we know it comes back, and interactions and economic transactions as we know it come back. So, you know, could that happen in the third quarter? It absolutely could, and it should, in my mind, if we do a good job battling the virus right now in the second quarter. So, in my mind, that's really what we're going to be focused on. But I think you want to keep the economy, and you want to keep our restaurants and businesses in a place where, as soon as we can get those lights back on and those people back in there, you know, they can do it, and it'll have a real impact in terms of output and getting back to normal.
Then let's speak optimistically. Let's say the third quarter, you know, let's say we're starting to see some good signs, and we're starting to put people back to work, and the people that were unemployed for, I don't know, a couple of months or maybe even 3 months, let's say in the third quarter they start to go back to work and we're starting to see progress. How long then would it take from that point to get back to the normal life that we all had prior to this outbreak of coronavirus? And I don't have to give me a pinpoint. I would never expect you to give me a pinpoint time. That would be unfair to ask you.
If I knew the answer to that, I'd be in a different job.
Right, exactly.
I think it's going to take a couple quarters, 2 to 3.
Okay.
I think it's likely. I think it's. I'd love to tell you we can get there in one quarter, but I think, you know, reaccelerating an economy does take time, especially when you've seen a structural shift, which I think you're going to be seeing here. So I think it takes 2 quarters, maybe a little bit longer, but I think in an optimistic scenario, hopefully, you know, you're talking about a June, July, a summer period where we're starting to reaccelerate. Hopefully the virus is contained enough where you don't see that wave two that limits us in the fall. But again, that's certainly a possibility. And then by the end of the year, you know, we're starting to look like where we were at the start of the year.
Is there anything that we can do proactively right now or in the very near future to even indirectly stimulate things at all, just to try to get ahead of the curve?
So, well, there's two things I'd mention on that point, and just overnight, and I haven't seen the final text, but this $2 trillion stimulus bill that the White House and the Senate and Congress have been negotiating, it looks like there is agreement there. Again, we have to see the text, but there's going to be significant dollars for, as I understand it, payments to Americans directly, make-whole concept for unemployment potentially, as well as close to $400 billion for small to medium-sized businesses in what will be initially loans, but then they will become forgivable after employment at those businesses is maintained for a time period. So that, just to give your listeners a sense, that type of stimulus is unprecedented. That's 10% of the country's GDP. So that is a significant amount of stimulus in the pockets of Americans and to businesses to keep them ready to ready to reemerge and give them a bit of spending power during this crisis that we're navigating. So that's really significant stimulus. More details to come on that, but I think that's going to be helpful. At the state level, we've done a number of things in terms of relaxing the date when taxes are paid. There's been a lot of other initiatives around utility moratoriums on shutoffs for both residential and commercial. I heard you mentioned before, the insurance commissioner yesterday was urging insurers to basically have a grace period for payments. So really trying to provide flexibility in terms of when payments are made and really urging folks to work with their banks, their landlords, their suppliers to kind of get through this, because everyone's going through the same thing. One other thing we're going to be rolling out here shortly, and the governor announced this formally last week, is what we're calling the Connecticut Recovery Bridge Program, which will be a small loan program for small businesses in the state, up to 100 employees, where we're going to provide a bit of working capital. And this will be very short-term loans, but inexpensive loans at 0% interest. So something that there'll be more details out there today on this, but this is something we're looking to supplement what the federal government is doing at the SBA level and the stimulus bill.
So there's low interest or very low interest loans that are going to become available, including zero interest loans. What about the business those? And I'm only playing devil's advocate with you. That's all. If there's a small business owner who's saying, man, I have a safety net of 3 to 4 weeks, I can get through a month and I should be okay. But anything after that, I don't even think I could get a loan, because forget even interest, I probably couldn't even pay the principal back. I've had to lay people off that have been loyal and dedicated to me, and especially these smaller mom and pop businesses that don't have a corporate office that they can kind of rely on in tough times like this. Are there any grants that would be available where they can just get other than this stimulus coming from the feds? Are there any grants that are available that they could get even a little bit of amount of money that they don't have to pay back, just so that they can get themselves back up and running?
Yeah, so the main form of that grant is going to come from this close to $400 billion from the federal government,
okay.
which effectively becomes a grant. It's a loan that becomes a grant if you maintain your payroll for a certain time period. So that's going to be the main tool. And listen, the federal government, they have the significant firepower in terms of dollars.
Sure.
And they are stepping up in a meaningful way here. At the state level, our primary focus has been this zero interest loan just to provide flexibility and liquidity in this uncertain time period. But that is not a grant. We understand that. But the federal response is significant there, and I think that's going to be really important to small businesses.
My final question to you is self-employed. We've got a lot of people who are self-employed in this state, you know, and whether it's just them and maybe they've got a 1099 person that kind of helps them as a, you know, on the side or something, and they 1099 them, and they're technically the only employee. What do you say? What kind of advice can you give to that individual?
Well, it really depends. What we've seen, and we've done a bunch of survey, and roughly 50% of the businesses that we've surveyed in the state are operating at reduced capacity, and that's including, you know, sole practitioners, people that have 1099s, they're independent contractors. You know, so for the 50% that are not able and they're working at significantly reduced revenues, you know, I think trying to explore ways where they can be eligible for certainly some of the stimulus that's coming, they will be eligible for the Connecticut Recovery Bridge program that I mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really trying to make sure that we all of what we're doing for small business, we're doing for the sole practitioner as well, where at all possible, in terms of the relaxing of tax payment dates and some of the other forbearance measures. So we want to make sure that they're we understand the gig economy and the sole practitioner is a significant part of our economy. We want to make sure they're eligible for everything that the small businesses are.
And I'm sorry, I got to ask one more quick question. Are you guys working in concert with the feds? Has there been a lot of communication between the federal government and the state government, was particularly when it comes to economic and community development?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, we're in regular dialogue with our federal delegation, Governor Lamont, myself, and others in the administration, making sure that they understand how important some of these needs are. So there's been really, really great coordination and discussion between those groups.
Listen, I can't thank you enough for all of your time. You've been very generous. Keep up the great work. Maybe we'll have you back on in a couple of weeks as things I know are very fluid and are subject to change. But you were fantastic. I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate you being with us.
All right, Gary. Have a great day. Stay safe.
Yeah, you too. You do the same. Commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Economic and Community Development, that is David Lehman. We really appreciate his time this morning.